Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you as always this Wednesday, September 24th. So many things happening in the Old Pueblo, but probably none bigger than the election results, of course, breaking last night in Congressional District 7, where Adelita Grijalva won with an absolutely smashing result over here, 68.6% of the vote, compared to Daniel Gutierrez's 29.8% of the vote. Now, to give you an idea of what these election results mean, let's look back at 2024's numbers here briefly, okay? Daniel, of course, ran against Adelita's father at that time, and over 271,000 votes were cast in that election. This time around, less than 11 months later, only 87,000 total votes in this special election. So the turnout was essentially one third of the last congressional election over here, showing the voter apathy for special elections, quite frankly, right? When there's not a sexy presidential or sexy gubernatorial race in some capacity, people don't show up to vote. Now, last time around, Daniel's margin between Raul Grijalva and himself was a 26.9% margin in there, right? And I looked before this election yesterday on Polymarket. Those of you might remember Polymarket from last year on the presidential election. This is where you can bet on not just sporting events, but you can actually bet on elections. And it's turned out to be a pretty good indicator, quite frankly, because people may say one thing when you call an 800 number from a poll and how do you feel and where are you going to vote, but you're limiting yourself to people who even answer the phone for those kind of polls. When you go to Polymarket, you're talking about people that put their money where their mouth is, literally and proverbially. And of course, Polymarket before the election yesterday had a 99.7% chance of Adelita winning. And actually, the biggest money was just on what percentage she was going to win by. There was a lot more bets on just what percentage and whether it was going to be sub or below 40. And at the median, the highest percentage that they had expected her to win by was 43%, to be honest with you.
Wow.
So Polymarket had it even going stronger for Adelita than it did go, quite frankly, with her 38% and some change. I believe this was 38.6% here, this difference. And that really shows, like, what a difference that a year makes. We had sort of expected, perhaps, and I had heard from a number of political pundits on the right side of things, well, perhaps this Charlie Kirk effect, some sort of movement nationally to the right was going to play out. But if this election were a canary in a coal mine over here, and it may not be, the sample size is pretty small, and it's hard to draw too many inferences of this, but essentially the Grijalva family did substantially better in this election, winning by an extra 11.5 percentage points versus the race in 2024. And so I think a lot of people will be pretty surprised by that result. Not that anybody was really expecting the results to turn out differently and who was going to be the winner, but perhaps it might have been a little closer. So congratulations to Adelita for absolutely smashing her way through both the Democrat primary, a very contemptuous Democrat primary, where over $3 million were raised on that one. And she got 60% of the vote over there and over 68% of the vote in the general election. And she's going to be the first Latina congresswoman elected from the state of Arizona. And so she's going to get to start and pick up the remaining 15 months of her father's term. And then, quite frankly, Matt, she's got to run again. It just seems like this seat is just always perpetually running over here.
It's another run in November of next year, so which means the primary season will start gearing up in April or May, and it'll seem like, weren't we just here?
Yes. Yeah. And so there is a statement of interest already filed previous to these election results, in fairness, from the Daniel Gutierrez camp to run again in 2026. And it'll be interesting to see if they make that choice and take a round three on this one, or if, quite frankly, the Grijalva family name is just too strong to overcome. This is pretty much a mandate. When you win by nearly 40 points, like, what more can you say?
It's a VRA, it's a Voter Rights Act district. So it's already, you know, that's the Democratic advantage is baked into it, the party advantage, we'll say, because some voter right acts districts favor Republicans. So, I mean, the party dominance is baked into the district demographics, right? You go back to 2010, I believe it was, Ruth McClung, that was actually as a 50-44 kind of thing. I mean, she actually, but that's the last time that it was even a race. Okay. So that was how many cycles ago, you know, that was, seven cycles ago, seven election cycles ago. And, she darn near did it, right? A physicist, remember it takes a rocket. Maybe it does take a rocket scientist. That was kind of one of her, mottos, but she, and actually, before about a month or maybe a couple months before the election, the Democrats realized that Raul was flat-footed, that he had not been fundraising, that he had been taking things for granted, and the National Democratic Party had to come in and kind of save his bacon on that one. And otherwise, I think she could have pulled the upset off. It was in the Tea Party movement, so there was a big movement to the right. You talk about a Charlie Cook, I did it too, a Charlie Kirk effect. We're talking about polling. Charlie Kirk effect. Well, you think about how many ballots had already been voted by that time. So it's kind of hard to say if there was or wasn't any bearing on that. But you are right. The party dominance is baked into the demographics of the district, and that's what you get.
And it's safe to say that the fundraising on the primary side reflected that, with over $3 million raised on the Democrat primary and just over $100,000 raised on the Republican side, showing you, just like in Polymarket, if you follow the money, it tells you where the importance was in that race. And you win that primary, and you are set to potentially be our congressperson for the next decade
or more.
As
long as you choose to be,
Your pain tolerance for running every two years, quite frankly. And so congratulations to Adelita for a big win. She was, of course, you know, the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors and a TUSD school member before that. So 25 years in politics had built up a big name, and she got herself an absolutely big win yesterday. Yep. So I would extend the invitation out to Adelita. If she ever wants to come on this show, come hang with me. I'd treat you fairly, and we could talk about things that we could do together to help make Southern Arizona a better place, because that is what this is all about, Matt. But speaking of making Southern Arizona a better place, I got a big fat water bill yesterday, you know, coming in, and it looks like a lot of Pima County did as well too, as we got differential water rates out there, right? A 19% raise to businesses and consumers living outside of the incorporated part of Tucson, Arizona, and unincorporated Pima County. That is an absolutely staggering number over there, to drop just a 19% jump on you. If those that are paying close attention remember that the city of Tucson charged differential water rates from 2021 to 2023 before being sued by the Board of Supervisors, who hired Snell and Wilmer to do that particular lawsuit, as they specialized in some of these nuances. And they found a sort of loophole where the city hadn't done a very specific study to legally raise those rates. And as such, the differential water rates were deemed illegal, and the city of Tucson had to stop charging that differential rate. But the city, this is our city too, that, mind you, is nearly bankrupt enough to have to run a special election to raise taxes for you, decided to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and do that study just so that they had the legal wherewithal to try again to charge rates that were now nearly 20% more. And so it'll be interesting to see how this one plays out, because I still hear rumblings of a potential class action lawsuit against the city of Tucson for charging those rates between 21 and 23 that were deemed to be illegal. The judge just didn't rule that the city had to refund that money. So I think there's possibly something there. And I wouldn't be surprised to see some heavy water user in the private sector, think if you were a golf course in the county, La Paloma, Southwest Value Partners, or Ventana Canyon or something like this, what's a 20% water bill increase worth to you? Potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars. Right. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see some challenges still out there on the horizon on this one, even if the genesis of that isn't the Pima County Board of Supervisors.
The thing that gets me about the water rates, and the thing of it is, they put it out there. It's in articles. The differential rates V1, version one, was we're going to take these rates and we're going to equity, right? We're going to use this extra revenue we get from the differential rates, and we're going to offset for people inside the city of Tucson who can't afford to pay their water bill. Then, you know, a year later, after they're told, no, that's illegal, you can't do that. Well, and they come back and say, well, you know, it really does cost us more. And here's the study to prove it costs us more to deliver. Well, which is it, guys? I kind of feel like I'm being flim-flammed here, because they're giving me different stories. So if you've got articles and documents out there saying, well, we're going to use the extra revenue from our rates to help income redistribution. Let's just call it what they wanted to do it in version one. And then in version two, they say, well, no, it really costs us more. And this is just an offset. Which is it? It's an inconsistent story. And that's the whole thing as a water consumer who's being affected by this. That's the thing that always stuck with me in version two.
Right. And of course, many of the wells that are out there, many of the straws in our earth, for lack of a better explanation, are located outside of the city of Tucson. The creation of Tucson Water as a utility was designed so that there could be this monopolistic position, not to give the government an advantage to put their social programs in there, but to provide lower rates for people and give the economies of scale of a single water utility, rather than having each neighborhood have its own water source in some capacity. And that seems to have turned around and bit us in the rear in some capacity here. And to me, that's quite sad. I think that there's some storm clouds on the horizon on this one. We're just getting bill number one over here sent out for the month of August. So everyone's going to take a look at this. And I think you're going to see this start popping up on the news again over here, Matt. But why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, we should have Sergio Pinon. They're opening up a new restaurant in the city of Tucson. Just opened a few weeks ago, Redbird Scratch Kitchen. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Matt Neely on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Another little tragically hip cut there by Matt Neely. Thank you for bringing that one, and thank you for listening to The Morning Voice today. Before the break, we were talking about the differential water rates between unincorporated Pima County and the city of Tucson. Lots of changes between the county and the city. When you're doing business, there's a differential minimum wage as well, too, and some cultural differences as well, too, in those locations. And to talk about that today, we're lucky enough to have my friend, Mr. Sergio Pinon, in studio. Sergio is the owner of Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar, and they've just opened up a second location in the Sam Hughes neighborhood. Good morning, Sergio.
Good morning, everybody.
Hey, thanks so much for coming on The Morning Voice over here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me here today.
Hey, Sergio, we had you on our previous radio show a little over about a year ago or so to talk about Redbird's first location, but why don't you give our listeners that maybe didn't have a chance to hear that show a little bit about you and your background.
Yeah, I was the concept Redbird Scratch Kitchen Plus Bar. We started in 2023 as a concept of, yes, bringing elevated bar food with the great hospitality, food made from scratch, craft cocktail list. We opened our first doors December of 2023. And so far, it's been a great success. You know, it's bizarre just thinking about being here last year, talking about the first restaurant, now talking about the second location. It's pretty exciting, especially the Sam Hughes neighborhood. It's a great location. I believe it's turning 100 years old, that building where the old Rincon Market was.
Right. This is called the Village at Sam Hughes, right? The former Rincon Market / former Flores Market location.
That is correct. And we're just excited. I think it's a great fit for the community. Talking about Redbird itself, we're focusing on tacos, burgers, and wings, but we're making them with a lot of passion, great ingredients. There's a whole process that goes into the food and whatnot. And we're just happy, you know, to be able to serve the community. We've been very successful and people have been very happy with what we're doing so far. We're the first location is located at 6444 North Oracle Road. That's our OG location, we call it. And our second location right now is 2515 East 6th Street.
Right, and so that's the corner of 6th and Tucson. And there's some competition on that corner as well, too, because you've got Bob Dobbs, which has been there for years, and then a new restaurant just opened up, a new coffee house and restaurant right next to you as well, too, right?
That is correct. So we're partnered with Sonoran House, actually. We're sharing the building. They took over the market side where, you know, Rincon Market, Flores Market used to have. So we're on the restaurant side. We're sharing the building. We're sharing a couple things. So it's a pretty unique concept. With the whole sharing and you know dealing all the details out of how we're gonna be able to work in that building, which was pretty exciting as well. But they're doing their thing, you know. They do tapas. They have the, in my opinion, one of the best breads in Tucson. They make their own bread, so they're doing some great things as well in there. But yeah, we are. And then we have Tumerico right in front of us as well, which, you know, one of the top Yelp locations as well.
In sure, award-winning restaurant. Definitely big players, heavy hitters. They've done a great job over there as well, too. And Borderlands right across the street as well, too. So there's a lot of hospitality activity, let's say, at that 6th and Tucson intersection, no?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's just what the neighborhood needed. There's a little bit of everything for everybody in that corner, which is very exciting. I think they're thinking about possibly putting another concept somewhere around that area in the future as well. But I think it's going to be a good destination for foodies as well.
So talk about sharing this building a little bit over here. How do two restaurants, two separate ownership groups, I imagine, right?
That's correct.
How do you share a building? I know sharing is caring, but you get into bathrooms and water and who pays the air conditioning bill and whatnot. And at some point, you got to cut that pie into two pieces. How do you do that?
So we're both different entities under the same building, basically. We're sharing utilities based on our square footage. That was kind of the big deal. We are sharing the bathroom. So if you're in Sonora House, you have to walk through Redbird to be able to access the bathrooms and whatnot. But so far, it's been great. I think we made a structure where we know exactly what is your space, what you're supposed to do, and what, you know, we're able to share. And, you know, we've been professionals as well. We're making sure that, you know, everything is working how it's supposed to be without interfering with our operations.
Sure, not an easy feat to do, I'd imagine, because when you've got some space that's yours and you've got some space that's theirs, and then you have some space that's ours, right? What belongs to everybody belongs to nobody, and nobody like wants to take it, you know, take the responsibility for whether it's a cleaning or a maintenance or a fee associated with that. So that could certainly present some challenges, no?
It does, but I think, you know, as we're trying to be very direct and very, you know, transparent when it comes to those things. And we, even before we start opening the restaurants, we kind of set some duties for everybody to make sure everybody knows what they're supposed to be doing. And so far, you know, it's been great. It's been a great partnership.
And you just got this Redbird open just a few weeks ago, no?
That is correct. We're in our fourth week. So far, it's been going great. The community has supported us very, very well. We've been pretty busy from the get-go. We even have to put ourselves on wait and not being able to see a lot of people just because we're trying to operate, making sure that we're executing to the level that we want and making sure that anybody that's dining with us is having the best experience as possible.
Of course, that's wise business right there, my friend, for sure, for sure. I've been trying to get you on this show all month to talk about this Redbird opening over here, but I know just what a crunch it is to open up a new restaurant. How are you holding up over here with store number two?
So far, great. Honestly, we've been getting a lot of support from even our first location. We had a lot of trainers that came out and helped us out, hired several managers as well to help us with the new adventure. I think one of the biggest challenges is, you know, building that culture, that team, you know, brand new team, brand new building, finding those people that want to do hospitality that is flowing through their veins and really, you know, want to do an excellent job when it comes to a dining experience. And as you know, I think the whole hospitality dining experience keeps evolving, and, you know, this restaurant's doing this, now this restaurant's doing this other thing. So you're always trying to reinvent yourself as far as, you know, what can we give our guests value for to make sure that they're happy and they feel that, you know, whatever they're spending in your business, it's valuable for them.
Without a doubt. And you're so close to the university too. Getting open right in September is pretty key, right? Because I mean, that's right when school starts. You're right when the first home football games are happening as well too. How have the game day experiences been over at Redbird thus far?
So far, so good. We did have the games on. We have about 5 TVs around the bar area. It's not necessarily, you know, the sound on your face. You know, you can watch a game if you like to, but it's been great. I believe, you know, even before the tailgate, you know, people are trying to go get their wings on or a burger or just a cocktail right before they go to the game. So far, it's honestly been amazing. The support has been very, very shocking to see as far as, you know, you just open up a restaurant and all these people want to come in and try you out or, you know, give you the support. Hey, I've been to the first location. This is closer to home now. I'm so excited you're here. I'm driving from Vail. Now I don't have to drive all the way to Oracle. I can drive here. So it's very exciting just to see all that feedback.
And obviously the U of A is like home games being right down the street, just a shot down 6th Street there, certainly are going to add a nice element of walk by and walk through customer base over here. I saw just yesterday they announced the game time for the October 4th game. So that's not this Saturday's road game against Iowa State, but the next game, it's a noon game actually. And so we're going to have a tailgate starting at the University of Arizona at 6 a.m. because it's 6 hours before kickoff. So you should be there with some breakfast burritos or something like that, right? Ready to go. You're probably going to have a lot of red shirt, you know, and red hatted folks out there early, early in the morning waiting for Redbird to open up.
I know. And you know, like anything, you change and adapt, you know, whatever the guest needs, you know, we're always there to adjust whatever needed.
Without a doubt. Well, I appreciate you taking the chance on location number 2 and think that this is an absolutely great location for Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar, 6th in Tucson. You're going to have to go check it out. We're going to take a quick break and hear from some great sponsors over here, but more from Sergio Pinon, owner of Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar, and some of the trials and tribulations of opening up a new restaurant when we come back on The Morning Voice. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM.
You can follow along on YouTube, 1030 The Voice is our channel. Hit that subscribe button and follow along with us, see your voice.
Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Every weekday, 7 to 9 a.m., you get The Morning Voice. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council bringing his engagement hour. On Wednesdays, you get me, a dose of business, restaurants, and just a little bit of politics over here on The Morning Voice. On Thursdays, Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing you the wonders from the University of Arizona. But we're joined for another segment by a good buddy of mine, fellow restaurateur, Mr. Sergio Pinon, owner of Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, so let's talk about the challenges of opening restaurant number 2 over here. There's one thing to have one restaurant, right, Serge? You can will that thing into existence. You can micromanage it and work 100 hours a week. I've tried it, you know, to make a restaurant work. But what do you do for location number 2? How are you managing consistency between the two locations now that you've opened Redbird number 2 at 6 in Tucson?
It's definitely exciting. As far as you're developing people, you're now entrusting other people to run your business with the same passion and the same intensity that you have. Now it's, you know, driving back and forth with, I'm sure, you know, you have the same experience. But really entrusting people to really do what your vision, you know, to making sure that they're following procedures and giving the trust, you know, now weekly calls, making sure, you know, there's a lot of texts going on back and forth. Checking guest feedback, making sure we're sharing that and making sure that everybody is on the same page. That's the fun part, you know, making sure that now you have I think about it like you have now a brand new baby, and then that baby needs a lot of your attention right now, but then you have, you know, your toddler that needs attention as well, and then you have to go back and forth with it.
Redbird's had great reviews though, Sergio. I mean, like, this has been a really well-received restaurant as well too. How are the reviews going thus far on the new location?
So far, it's going great. Realistically, you're still going to have those people that are not going to be fans of what you're doing, and that's completely okay. You can't make everybody happy. But at the end of the day, hospitality and food goes hand in hand together. So we just want to make sure that anybody that walks into the building, it's greeted with warm hospitality, and the food is tasting as fresh as it can be and executed the best way that it can be.
I love it. I think it's been a great product thus far. And I've been amazed to see your success over at the Rudisill and Oracle location. And I think this new one in Sam Hughes is going to be even more visible, quite frankly. I mean, that's both a pretty busy street and it's got a pretty affluent neighborhood there to support it, even with walk-in traffic as well, too, no?
Even though with the whole project that's going on with, you know, they're redoing the roads and whatnot all the way to 6th Street.
Yeah, I feel like that's been going on forever. Like, when is that scheduled to be done? You must know because you got your finger on the pulse. Tell us about that construction.
I saw that it was going to take about 3 more years so for the whole project to be completed. However, we're excited, you know, with change and being able to be more accessible. And I think the whole neighborhood needed a revamp on the roads. There's a lot of parking on the back of the restaurant. I don't think a lot of people have noticed that. It's still accessible to the back, but even right now they're working on the main entrance on their parking spots.
But 3 more years? Like, are they building like a freeway overpass over here? Like, I thought we were getting road diets in the city of Tucson. Like, this doesn't sound like a diet.
Yeah, I think it's 3 years for the whole, you know, all the 6th Street all the way to Wilma.
Okay.
I think that's what I read. Not necessarily yes in front of us. So I don't know how that will take. Yeah, I don't know how much time that will take. But I'm anticipating at least 1 more year, I would say. Regardless, so far, even with the whole construction and everything, we've been able to get packed and people find ways to find parking there. So we're very appreciative of that. But I do believe the whole construction and the project is going to just make it more accessible. So we're excited to be part of that.
So tell me about the differences now that you've opened up a restaurant in unincorporated Pima County. What are some of the challenges you had opening up in the city that maybe didn't occur in this first location in the county?
I think the way that you have to, for example, I think the biggest one that I thought it was interesting, even going to the liquor hearing. I didn't have to do that when I was in Pima versus the city. I had to attend to Pima, to city council and be part of that. That was something, you know, that was I didn't experience before. So there's a couple more hoops that you have to go through to get permits and whatnot, maybe taking a little longer. But I guess it's just part of the process and the things that you have to do.
It is. Essentially, for the listeners, the liquor licensing process works as follows. You've got to go through a municipal approval first before you even get to the state hearings. The idea is the local guys, if they know you and they think you're a real jerk, forget it. The state's not even going to waste their time with you. So it's sort of a two-pronged approach. And your license depends on essentially a city council hearing. Most of the time, these line up with the consent agenda. And if there's not public protest, they're just sort of rubber stamped and approved. But as we talked about just a few weeks ago on this show, there can be municipal denials of this. That just happened to the Circle K at the Grant and Craycroft area as well. They were looking to move their liquor license across the street to the WaFed Bank location,
right,
and they were denied by the city of Tucson. So the city can, in fact, deny this, and then you get this whole regulatory process of challenging up in the state as well. But you guys got by without any fights. Were there any protest of your liquor license?
No, not at all. We did had a, you know, we had to do a meeting with the neighborhood, and a lot of people went in, asked questions. You know, I think that there was a big concern about not turning the space into a nightclub and not being open until 2 a.m. and whatnot, which, you know, we're keeping the same hours of operations. We close at 9 p.m. Sunday through Thursday, and then Fridays and Saturdays 10 p.m. But I think that was the biggest concern, and that's why we had to do, you know, meetings and talk to the neighborhood people and making sure that everybody understood the project and the concept.
Sure. I think almost everybody, Sergio, wants a restaurant near their place. It's an amenity, right? This is a benefit. If I've got a place that my wife and I can walk to dinner from our house, have a bottle of wine and walk home and a nice warm Tucson night, amazing, right? But not everybody wants a nightclub in their backyard.
Yeah, and to be honest, we don't want to be a nightclub. I don't want to be there until 2 or 3 in the morning, to be honest. I think there's a lot of other, you know, bag of issues that come with opening late, and now you have to make sure you have bouncer securities. And I know, you know.
I live that remark. Yeah, yes, I know very well how that works.
So because we're also operators, like I'm there day to day running the shift as manager as well. You know, we get there early. I don't want to sacrifice time with my family to open a couple more hours later, if that makes sense.
It does. I completely understand that one. And there's a cost-benefit analysis of that one as well, too. When you're looking at what labor rates cost today, staying open until midnight, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, particularly keeping the kitchen open late, but even with the waitress hours now, like this is starting to be a lot of money every hour to stay open, and you've got to at least have enough sales to justify that. We talked about on the last show, Arizona's minimum wage again going up on January 1st, and so the full Monty minimum wage inside the city of Tucson will be $15.45 an hour, and servers will be $12.45 an hour. And so you got 3 or 4 servers, a bartender, a busboy, a couple line cooks, and a dishwasher going. Like, goodness gracious, you got to do $1,000 or $2,000 an hour in sales to make that make sense and fit inside the box. And I don't know if that's possible in the Sam Hughes neighborhood, for example.
I don't think it's needed. I think what the neighborhood wanted is just a place to have lunch or dinner, you know, without, you know, having too much noise and whatnot, being able to have a nice conversation with their families. But yeah, it is something to think about, especially with the whole, you know, wages nowadays, you want to have people there to make sure that they're taking care of your guests, and that costs money like any business. So we're definitely looking at that, especially for next year. You know, we want to keep giving guests the best value, but without compromising the execution.
Last year, when you were on the show, you told me kind of a cool story about how you came up with the name of Redbird. Can we talk about that for a brief moment?
Yes, we initially wanted to do a sports bar, and we were thinking about the Cardinals. We wanted to keep it local, wanted to keep it, you know, here in Arizona, and eventually we thought a sports bar just might attract the wrong crowd, or we wanted to do something a little more polished, especially if you're doing scratch made food and craft cocktails. We wanted to match that same vibe. So we wanted to do something a little more upscale. We liked the name Redbird. It just kind of sounded good at the time. And then we added the Scratch Kitchen Plus Bar. We wanted to let people know that, hey, we're making all of our salsas, all of our brines, all of our, you know, dressings. We're butchering meat in the restaurant. And even with our craft cocktail list, we're making all of our syrups in-house using real fruit. We're not just buying anything out of a bottle and mixing it. We're transforming ingredients in the restaurant, and we wanted to let people know that. So then, you know, Redbird stick, then Scratch Kitchen Plus Bar, and we like how you sounded, and we went for it.
So big Cardinals fans over here. Does that make you like a Cardinals sports bar in some capacity? You got a lot of Redbird fans over there?
It's funny because we don't necessarily have like a lot of Cardinals or you know, we try to keep the restaurant kind of neutral in that way, you know, a little classy per se, if you want to call it that. But yeah, anytime we see a Cardinals fan, we're like, hey, Redbird, you know, we're pointing them out, we're giving them a hug, we're giving them a handshake, just because, you know, that's part of the vision.
No, it makes total sense, you know, and you know, Cardinals fans have had a rough run of it too for a large portion of the last 30 years, much like I'm a Lions fan, so I know from one rough team to another over here. Might help sell a few extra adult beverages after every Sunday watching our two teams compete and lay it out on the gridiron. Why don't we take a quick break over here? We've got one more segment coming up with Sergio Pignon. He's the owner of Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar, and we'll be right back on 10:30 a.m. The Voice. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. We've got one final segment with special guest Sergio Pignon. He's the owner of Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar. Welcome back, Sergio.
Thank you.
Hey, so you've opened up this new location. Redbird opened up on September 1st, I want to say, at 6th and Tucson area. Tell me a little bit about your menu. What are some of the favorite dishes that you guys are whipping up over there for the people of Tucson at Redbird?
Right now, the number one sellers are elote nachos, which, you know, when people hear nachos, they're like, oh, you know, you can get nachos everywhere. But they've never had our nachos, which, you know, we were roasting corn in the restaurant. We're actually layering all the ingredients on the nachos. You know, sometimes when you have nachos, you know, you start eating all the ingredients that are on top. And when you get to the middle,
it's just a pile of dry chips, right? Over there. And that's no good.
Nobody likes that. So what we thought of doing, layer them out, right? Every chip is going to have an ingredient. So we're also doing candied peppers. You got cotija cheese, cilantro lime crema, a fresh cut of cilantro, red onions, a little bit of tajin to give a little acidity. And my personal favorite is having birria, shredded birria on top of the nachos. It's really good. We make our birria in-house. Takes about 12 hours to cook. Slow cooking process. Shreds really well. That's right now our number one seller
That sounds delicious. Maybe next time we get you on the radio show over here, Matt and I are going to have you bring some elote nachos for us to start the day off right for breakfast.
I'll be more than happy to. And our three main pillars are going to be the smash burgers, the loaded wings, and the tacos. Even our wings, you know, we go through a whole brining process, making sure that adds flavor. They're juicy on the inside, crispy on the outside. It's a 48-hour process to make sure that we're getting the wings ready for that. So that's another top seller as well.
No, that sounds delicious. And this is part of the reason that Redbird's been such a success, and that in 2 years, because your two-year anniversary is coming up now, right?
That is correct, in December.
So in December, you'll have 2 years at the first Redbird at Oracle and Rudisill area. And so what are the other secrets to Redbird's success? Like, what can you say to other restaurateurs out there, advice on opening up their second location?
Consistency. I believe that's the main thing, making sure you're keeping everybody motivated, your staff, the culture that you have in the restaurant, that everybody's buying into your vision. You know, I think that's the biggest, in my opinion, the biggest challenge, making sure that you can get everything done through your people at a high level and high motivation. And in my opinion, that's one of the secrets that we're the employer of choice. I hear from our staff, this is the best job I've ever had. This is the best managers I've ever worked with. And you know, at a certain level, you're like, yeah, please tell me more. But you also have to reflect, how can we do better? How can we teach? Because we have a lot of U of A students that work for us. How can I teach them habits or just principles that they can use in their future jobs? And that can be as little as making sure they're on time, making sure they're presentable, making sure they're able to multitask, dealing with different difficult situations, especially directly with people. You know, at the end of the day, most jobs you have to be have interaction with other people, and how to turn things around. And those are the little things that I try to teach my staff. And you know, at the end of the day, you know, you can't do it without them. So that's the biggest thing.
How are you finding the job market? I'm starting to see more applicants these days for the first time in, gosh, probably 4 or 5 years, I think. Like, we're starting to have as many applicants as we have jobs, actually. I don't even know what to do with myself.
It's funny because I think we get at least 50 applicants a week right now. And it's just, at one point, I even stopped looking at it because we're even a little overstaffed at the moment. But mostly it's word of mouth, you know, just like in the restaurant industry, word of mouth is big. You know, people telling, oh, I went to this restaurant, everything was great. It also works the same, I believe, with employees. Like, they're telling their friends, they're telling other people, like, hey, come work there. You know, I make good money here, and, you know, the environment is great and whatnot. So I think that's a big key.
I think so, too. So Tucson goes crazy for happy hour, Serge. Tell me a little bit about Redbird's happy hour here in the next couple minutes.
Happy hour Monday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. You're going to find discounts on food and discounted drinks as well. Even you can find $7 old fashions that we smoke at the table, which I think is pretty cool. It's a really good value with some Luxardo cherries, which in my opinion, they're the best cherries out there.
Oh, yeah. Those are the good ones right there. And those are expensive, too.
And getting for $7, you know, it's bringing the value there, right? You're going to find all our scratch-made food and our craft cocktails in happy hour as well there.
Love it. Why don't you take a little bit of time and tell our listeners about where they can find both Redbird locations?
Yes. So we have our OG location, our original location, 6444 North Oracle Road. You're going to see us in the Hobby Lobby Plaza. And then our second location is at the Sam Hughes neighborhood, 2515 East 6th Street. You can check out our website, redbirdrestaurants.com. Follow us on Redbird on Instagram as well. We have a Facebook page. You can find a lot of our dishes, a lot of our content on Instagram and Facebook.
Love it. Well, looking forward to checking that one out over there. Listeners, do take the opportunity to go visit this new Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Cocktails. They've made a big investment into Midtown Tucson, right? Right at 6th and Tucson, the former location of both Rincon Market and Flores Market Run, right next to Bob Dobbs and the brand new Sonoran House. Like, pretty awesome stuff to see Midtown redevelopment in such cool historic properties, no?
It's exciting. I believe it's the right fit, exactly what the neighborhood has been asking for. You got approachable food, great hospitality. We're doing a lot of things from scratch. A great foodie corner at the moment, which, you know, we're excited to be part of.
I love it. I'm excited for your success, Sergio. You got any future location expansion plans coming up at all? You thinking of anything else?
At the moment, we're just focusing on executing, making sure that we're providing great food and great experiences for our guests.
I love it. Great answer. Well, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us over here on The Morning Voice. I wish you a tremendous amount of success at Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar number 2.
Thank you
so much.
As
well, too. And listeners, don't go anywhere. We've got a whole nother hour of local news and talk coming up after the break. Matt Neely and I are going to break down not just the election that happened last night in CD7, but we're going to talk about Nikki Lee looking to legalize or, you know, make a new different code for street drug use over here. City elections coming up. We got a TUSD bond override, Project Blue differential water rates, and more coming up after the break. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Hour 2 of The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Lots of things going on in the old Pueblo today, Matt. I did note the irony there between the city of Tucson's 14% fight against TEP's 14% raise on prices, but yet simultaneously raising the water rates 19%.
Standing up for affordability, Grant. They're worried about burdening the peoples.
Yeah,
and after we burden the peoples, it's okay.
Yes.
TEP burdens the people, not okay. Trying to unpack that one.
Rules for thee and not for me, if I remember correctly, the old statement over there for sure, and definitely something for us to keep an eye out for in the old Pueblo. I always like to start off the 8 o'clock hour though with like local hospitality business and a little bit of sports news and things like that. Some stuff that you don't always get in your local papers over here. So to start with, the Tucson Sugar Skulls have announced the hiring of a new coach yesterday, Rayshon Kaiser, who is the former defensive coordinator the last 2 years with the Sugar Skulls, was promoted to head coach yesterday. And so that's going to lock down a coaching regime for the next couple of years for the Sugar Skulls. Remember that the Indoor Football League now has their championship game the next couple of years.
Two more years, TCC, right?
So this is definitely something we should all get out there and support. I know the season is done and it's a ways away from the upcoming new season, but this is definitely a group and a team we should look out for and support. The Tucson Roadrunners, speaking of another team we should go out there and support, starting off their season again on October 10th on the road, and their first home game is October 18th against the Calgary Wranglers. And so do get out there and support things. Everything is about to start happening in Tucson in mid-October.
Like, you know,
it is insane just the amount of events and activities going on over here. We've got Arizona Restaurant Week from a statewide level going on right now for a few more days. Mostly Phoenix-based, run by the Arizona Restaurant Association, but they've got deals, you know, in the $25 and $35 and $45 price ranges out there in various restaurants. The Pueblo de Maíz Festival goes on with the Tucson City of Gastronomy between the 26th and the 28th of this month.
And what better way to celebrate that than with those elote nachos that Sergio was describing?
Legitimately,
yeah,
right? Those sounded great. It's early, and I was ready to devour those.
I generally
don't have the restaurant guests bring food because it's 7 or 8 o'clock in the morning. But gosh, that sounded pretty good. We might have to think about that policy.
Sounds like keeping that on the list,
right? For sure. So many other festivals popping up over here as well too. The Tucson Celtic Festival coming up in about 3.5 weeks at the Rito Park. I love the Rito.
All right.
I've got Scottish heritage in me as well, too, so a big fan of that one. I'm going to have somebody from the Celtic Association, that group, Angela Moore, is going to come on next week on the show and talk about that Tucson Celtic Festival and what a little local caber toss action might look like for you over there.
Right in the parking lot. Let's do it.
Some bagpipes and Scottish heritage. I am all about that one. That's going to be like the 24th, 25th-ish range over there in October. Boots in the Park, the music festival, is coming up as well, too. I mean, there is so many things. The baseball season for the Tucson baseball team starts off on October 16th against the Hermosillo Naranjeros. So that should be a real whopper. Like, how cool to have professional baseball coming back to the old Pueblo.
On a nice, cool, comfortable evening. You can go out and enjoy this.
And this is in 3.5 weeks, Matt. Like, everything is about to go off in mid-October, because as soon as that weather breaks, that is our season, like 100%, right? It's literally about October 10th that restaurant high season starts, generally coinciding with the first frost on the East Coast somewhere and our break in weather over here, which looks like it's coming sooner than later. There's rain for the weekend.
Yeah, and temps in the daytime temps starting on Friday in the like 90, maybe 85, 86. I'll take that.
I'm not fooled though yet, Matt. I watch the weather. As somebody with a huge 23,000 square foot outdoor patio, I watch the weather like Chuck George. And so let me tell you, like, this never fully ends until about the second week of October.
No, there's warm days ahead, aren't there?
Yes. There's always like that last week of September.
Nature
first
just
week
says,
of October,
no, I'm not done with you yet.
Yes. But we've got that early football game too on October 4th.
I know. This has got to be. I saw that. And I thought of you. I thought that's got to be good news for you, where you don't have everybody tied up at dinner time and until midnight. So you are going to have a chance at some business after the game.
Very much so. And that's
restaurateurs.
And that's a breakfast tailgate over there, right? It's hard to start drinking at 6 o'clock in the morning on the U of A mall.
Somehow we manage, but yeah.
It's the only time all year that you can have an open adult beverage on the U of A mall at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Socially acceptable.
You do need to kind of go out there and take advantage of that one.
Hey, before we segue to the next segment, congratulations to you. You were featured in the Arizona Daily Star last week. We did link it. If you want to find the article on Facebook, 1030 The Voice is our Facebook page. And, you know, hit the like button while you're there so you can be informed on all sorts of stuff. But kudos on that article. And I thought of our last conversation where you talked about 36 inches of rain. I didn't realize when you said that what an impact on you personally that had. So the article is definitely worth reading about your experience in Mexico as a businessman, and you're going to the U of A, and how you came here and basically like a phoenix, you rose from the ashes in Tucson.
Thanks. So, it was a very nice article. Coverage piece from the Daily Star. Sometimes they don't always treat me with kid gloves over there. You know, we've been part of a few lawsuits and you know, sort of counter government over regulation things. But I thought it was a fair, great piece by the Star. And like I always say, all press is good press unless you were on Kitchen Cops, my friend. So
right.
So most press is good press as far as that one goes. So we will take it. And thank you on that one, Matt. On some local Tucson business news that made me quite sad this week, though, I saw that Kirsten Block passed away at 83 years of age. For those that don't know who she and her husband were the founders of Buffalo Exchange, which started in Tucson here in the mid-1970s and grew to 41 locations in the United States. 41 Buffalo Exchanges. I had no idea. I knew there was about 20 because my wife, Katarina, has been to at least about 20 and dragged me to these Buffalo Exchanges. And Kirsten had, a few years ago, passed on the torch to her daughter to run the company. So certainly there's not going to be a direct business effect, but a shame to lose a real OG Tucson entrepreneur over there. A business model that started in the old Pueblo and went national. There aren't that many like that. And so, you know, just a reminder and remembrance to Miss Kirsten Block over there, a great Tucson businesswoman passing away at the age of 83.
I love it when somebody carves out a niche for themselves and figures out a way to do it a little bit differently and makes it work. And this is a great story, you know, where you do have people can recycle their clothes and it's just a great concept. And I just love it when somebody finds, kind of creates their own path in life. So a life well lived and I'm glad you stopped to remember.
Of course, without a doubt. I love Tucson business success stories, right? Like homegrown kids doing awesome things are great. Speaking of Tucson success stories, it looks like the opening of the Miramonte restaurant on Speedway has been just absolutely rave reviews. A very beautiful build out.
We spoke about this one last week over near Whole Foods, I believe, on Speedway near sort of Country Club.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Their opening date was the 18th, so the day after our show last week. I talked to owner Nick Kreutz yesterday. I'm going to get him on the show. It's going to take a few weeks. They're in like week one of restaurant opening, which is also known as don't die mode. So I think I'm not going to be able to get him in the next week or two, but assuming they survive, you know, physically and emotionally, we'll get him on just like we had Sergio over here in about 3 or 4 weeks when the dust settles over here. We're going to talk Miramonte restaurant, but do get out there and check that one out. It looks to be a spectacular build out, beautiful restaurant. And thus far the reviews are absolutely awesome as well too. I get lots of my gossip as we discussed at the last hour with Sergio on liquor license hearings, right? Kind of keeps me posted on what's coming because that process, as it goes through both the municipal and state thing, can take up to 105 days. And so it's a good sort of canary in the coal mine about what else is popping up, getting approved or disapproved by the city of Tucson. And it looks like we are just going to continue to have more and more full or partial service burger restaurants in Tucson. Shake Shack got their liquor license approval just yesterday at the city council meeting, and not for the Shake Shack that we talked about before that's coming at the Campbell and Fort Lowell area, but there's a whole nother Shake Shack coming at the corner of Broadway and Craycroft, the northeast corner over
there.
No
kidding.
That Shake Shack's liquor license just got approved, and so they're going to be the first Shake Shack in Tucson. It's going to be popping up in that neck of the woods, and of course that's Danny Meyer's burger, shake, and bottled wine restaurant. It started in Madison Square Park in 2001. This is James Beard award-winning restaurateur known for Gramercy Tavern and 11 Madison Park and Union Square Cafe. And they've actually made more money, you know, 100 times over, opening now hundreds of Shake Shacks throughout the United States. And Tucson is getting its first pair of Shake Shacks. And that first one is going to be at Broadway and Craycroft. As well, the liquor license was just approved yesterday for True Land Burgers and Beers. They're opening up in the former Smash Burger location at 4821 East Grant Road. So think Grant and Swan in that neck of the woods over there as well too. And so they got their liquor license approved yesterday, and that location, having already been a restaurant before, I think's a lot further along than say the Shake Shack that is still doing dirt work over at Campbell and Fort Lowell area. So my gut feeling says we'll be seeing that True Land pop open in the next couple of months as well too in the Grant and Swan area. So lots of burgers
is
with
True
alcohol.
Land Related to Gray's, or are they completely separate operations?
Different ownership.
Okay.
Trueland is related to Choice Greens, if I remember correctly, that particular ownership. And Gray's is a completely different concept. But they're similar in nature, and maybe the ownership might not like that, so I need to be careful on how I say that.
Okay,
but,
yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you're talking about like a sort of QSR burger type thing that also, you know, can have alcohol in it. Shake Shack has booze. You know, the Trueland burgers will have a booze component to it as well. And so the gourmet burger field just continues to get more and more crowded. And you see this blurred line between fast food and quick service and full service and all of these. And there's just an awful lot of hamburgers coming out into the old Pueblo over here.
Yep.
So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, Matt and I are going to help break down some of the problems coming up in the city of Tucson. We've got Project Blue, we've got a TUSD bond override, we got differential water rates, city elections, and what, the city is talking about legalized drug use on the streets? Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Matt Neely on 1030 AM The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to Hour 2 of the Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. Hey, quick correction over there. Trueland and Gray's does have some common ownership.
Oh, okay.
Mr. Neely, you are correct. That is Jeff Katz and Paolo, I think, are the owners of both of those concepts.
Okay.
And the Gray's is a little more limited service, and the Trueland is their full service model.
Got it. Okay.
So they do have some relation, and they are related to Choice Greens as well, too. So great success for those guys over there. And a quick correction here on the Morning Voice. Speaking of corrections, though, it seems like there's been a lot of news and corrections on Project Blue. Those who remember, of course, the giant data center project located in unincorporated Pima County, south of the city over here, that was set to be a potential economic windfall, but also a big data and power and water hog, potentially. Looks like it isn't going away after all, in spite of the rough treatment from the city of Tucson, that even Democrat Rex Scott wrote a piece about how that public display of screaming the loudest seemed to be the representative of all of the peoples, when that really wasn't the case. Project Blue and Beale Infrastructure isn't going anywhere. It was thought by our Pima County Board of Supervisors in a 3-2 vote that their contract basically ended if the city didn't choose to annex that property. And
right.
The city, of course, chose in a 7-0 vote, famously just a few weeks ago, to not do that. And everybody thought it was over. But it turns out that according to the lawyers, this contract with Beale Infrastructure is quite frankly unilateral, in the sense that Beale could use that as an opportunity to get out of that contract. It is an option for
right.
them, but not a requirement. And suddenly Beale is moving forward with what looks to be an air-cooled data center.
Right, a closed loop, like, kind of like a giant radiator or a heat exchanger, a chilling tower you'd see at an industrial place, right? And so the trade-offs for them was the 284 million gigawatts or whatever the actual electrical plan for the plant was. Now they're just going to shift more of it to the cooling side of it and less to the data processing. So they're trading off a little bit of data throughput to have a closed loop water system and not evaporate, you know, acre feet of water.
And that was a 3-2 vote, right, to sell that property
right.
to Beale over there, with supervisors Christie, Scott, and Hines voting yes,
mm-hmm.
and Allen and Cano on the no front, if I recall correctly over here.
Yeah.
And Allen and Cano seem to be on the no front for even having the data center to begin with. So we're like one precarious vote away from having, you know, some sort of blockage to this. Do you think there's anything the county can do to block this, or you think our three supervisors are steadfast moving forward with this one?
Well, if I know Pima County and I know the people that pull the levers around this place, I know their efforts are probably happening to do that. I'll say that. What I will say is it was a very interesting development last week when Jan Lesher released the memo from Beale Infrastructure. And Beale Infrastructure said, hey, look, the giant water-sucking, water-using plan that we submitted, that we based this our initial presentations to the city on, that was not our first choice. That was quite interesting to me, especially when Beale went on to say it was in response to requests, the word plural, requests, that means more than one, by the city to kind of help them build out their reclaimed water infrastructure. So you get this... I can't believe, and this is the thing that some city official is going to have to explain to me. The city traded $97 million of tax revenue for over 10 years for a plan that would use gargantuan amounts of water. It's so hard to follow that. Like, I could see that they would risk a lot of tax revenue for something that would save water, because that's their brand, right? That's their brand. We don't use water in Tucson. We're very careful with our water use. We plan our water use. Low flow toilets, you know, no lawns, the whole bit, going back decades. So the fact that the city of Tucson somehow managed to put it all on the line, right? $97 million of tax revenue for a plan that would use just gargantuan amounts of money somehow, because they would get help on a $100 million 18-mile pipeline. That is an amazing thing that I think is really being ignored in the press right now.
I think there's a lot being ignored in the press right now, because either our county supervisors had the wool pulled over their eyes or just didn't read this contract well, quite frankly, because it looked to me that their assumptions were that this deal was done the second the city
thought they could do the wham bam like they did with the Tucson Firefighters Pension Fund, where they said, yeah, we'll approve it, and then but you just got to go, you know, and get a water permit. And then all of a sudden, a $27 million plot of land was now worth $7 million, and a pension fund in Dallas, a firefighter's pension fund, was left holding the bag of a $20 million loss. And I think that they thought that, oh, we don't worry, we'll approve it, wink, wink, oh, we're business friendly. And then, as you say, oh, don't worry, the city will come around on the back end and just deny it.
The messaging is clear that the city of Tucson is not business friendly here on this one. There is no question that large developers are going to look at the city and look at this process and say, we got absolutely dragged through the coals over here. And Beal, quite frankly, has something to blame in this one as well, too, because this option B could have or should have possibly been presented at the time of these city council meetings. Like, how did this option B suddenly come up and nobody knew, oh, by the way, we have a way to air cool this?
Grant, that's the $97 million question that the city really needs to answer, because, and the cat was out of the bag with me real quick on this one, because a couple of weeks after the city said no, the big, you know, emotional tantrum, you know, thing, and the mayor throws the city manager and city staff under the, a couple weeks later, Vermaland of all people says, hey, we're going to build a data center in Eloy. It's going to be closed loop. Okay. So I know that Beal Infrastructure on a massive scale commercial project did not say, go back to the drawing board and come up with this engineering innovation that a data center could work. So both parties were interested. The city wanted help with a $100 million or whatever the pipeline was going to cost, the $18 million pipeline. And Beal Infrastructure and their client were thinking, okay, if the city wants to do this, we can get more data throughput, because we can allocate more of this energy that we've got budgeted to data processing. So both parties were somehow, I think, you know, enabling each other to go along with this foolish plan to use a ton of water.
Yeah, somewhere the city had to know, and right. City manager Tim Tamir just gets dragged through the coals on this one. Like, right. Like I have to say, like, honestly, I feel bad for him. Like, what a terrible process to have to go through. And I can't even imagine what it must have felt like to have been zoning attorney Kerry Sylvan representing Beal on this one, just to get absolutely railroaded by essentially a protest crowd. Not even really bringing data to the equation, pun intended, but instead bringing signs and screaming. And it just seems to me that whoever screams the loudest wins in Tucson over and over again, and that's sad.
Mm-hmm. It is. It is. But I think the public is owed an explanation on that sentence in Beal's memo. Why the city insisted that they change to a water-using plant instead of a closed-loop system.
Without a doubt. Well, lots more to discuss over here. We've got new laws popping up for the state of Arizona as well, too. When we get into our next segment over here after the break, Matt, I think we should start to break down some of those laws that are going to be popping up this Friday, right? 90 days after the close of the legislative session in Arizona, new laws go into effect, unless they were written in that law that made it effective immediately. So most of these new laws, there's over 240, some of them, and there's three or four on there that are going to have some effects on local Tucsonans. And I think we should talk about some of those ones coming up here after the break. We've also got Councilwoman Nikki Lee looking to make public drug use a misdemeanor, they're saying, in city of Tucson law, so that perhaps the city of Tucson could handle enforcements of drug use. And I've got some opinions on that as somebody that deals with keeping, let's call it, alcohol off the streets as
right.
a restaurant Budweiser on tour. I've got to fight people almost every single weekend to keep an open beer from slipping out of one of our establishments, a vodka soda from coming out of one of these establishments, and yet open fentanyl use, open heroin use, spoons and light bulbs everywhere at our bus stops are cool, but God forbid you have an open cocktail in the city of Tucson somewhere because you are going to jail, my friend. So lots to unpack over here. We've got another half an hour of The Morning Voice coming up after the break. You're listening to Grant Krueger and Matt Neely on 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Krueger. Love talking local news and politics with you every Wednesday, 7 to 9 a.m. on your morning drive, whether it's to work or school. We want to thank you for spending part of your Wednesday mornings with us. So breaking news over that last day that on the city council meeting yesterday, they had a little study session on potentially making open drug use a misdemeanor in the city of Tucson, Matt. I always kind of thought this was a crime to begin with, like a felony, and that they were just trying to avoid potentially with this having those individuals sent to the county attorney's office. Is that correct?
Sure. Well, this is the deal, right? So first of all, you're correct. State law says it's a felony, right?
Yep.
And secondly, the reason the city says they're doing it is because Pima County Attorney and Chief Kazmar has been, Police Chief Kazmar has been vocal about this too. His police officers are frustrated because they make arrests and then nothing happens at the county attorney's office. So it's sort of born out of this frustration. Well, let's downcycle the, let's downcycle this to a misdemeanor and let the city try to manage this. By making arrests that will be followed up on.
Proper enforcement has to be the key over here. Sure. Again, before the break, I was talking about how bars and restaurants are unfairly targeted for alcohol distribution on a very aggressive level. Often get visits from police about some kid got a DUI and said they had a couple drinks at your establishment, and there's actual like investigations into this sort of stuff. Whereas somebody actively doing fentanyl on the street doesn't even so much as get a bat of an eye at this point. You know, drive by any local bus stop or any sort of culvert or wash or whatnot, and active open drug use is now the norm inside of Midtown Tucson. I'm sorry, it just is.
And last time I saw, you know, fermented grain beverages or distilled beverages are not class one narcotics.
Correct. This is a I get more socially acceptable, taxable drug, you want to call it that, but it's not nearly the same scourge or same danger as what we're seeing with these synthetic opioids on the streets of Tucson. Like, this is 100x more deadly.
So I've seen some conversation by city officials about how this method will allow more frequent contacts with the police, more opportunities to encourage a person, hey, have you bottomed out yet? Are you ready to try sobriety? I know the Crime Free Coalition worked very hard on the transition center to carrot and stick approach, right? You can door number one or door number two with Carol Merrill. One is a jail cell and one is, you know, getting drugs out of your system. I know there's work on a state law that Josh spoke about with you, I believe, last week or week ago, about maybe you can hold them a little bit longer to let the drugs kind of oxidize out of their system a little bit better, and maybe they can make a more clear-headed decision. So I think this is part of what they're doing, what is behind what the city is doing, is they're maybe trying to do something to get people to get away from the drugs, because as long as an opioid is driving the bus and making decisions for you, you know, we all know what the outcomes are going to be. If you can get people to clean up for a little while, maybe in some, they'll have that moment of clarity or whatever and realize that there's a better way. I don't know, but
essentially you're not the legal decision maker when you're intoxicated, right? Whether it's alcohol or drugs, a legally binding contract to buy a piece of property or to get married or to do something like this can be considered null and void by somebody who's intoxicated. And so choosing to say, well, I've made a life decision or not about my future, the carrot or the stick, this decision to me, Matt, seems like all we're doing is making a smaller stick. We're making a skinnier, narrower switch as opposed to a big old branch.
Again, I always look towards Rachel Mitchell, who's the county attorney in Maricopa County. And like, is she kind of doing something like this? In her, I see a county attorney who's willing to step up to organize retail theft and really do something about it. Consequences for actions. And until you do have consequences for actions, behavior will continue and people will hear, oh, Pima County goes easy on this stuff. Well, what do you think is going to happen? What do you think happened in Portland, Oregon? This is in effect, Tucson is decriminalizing. It's a step towards it, right? They're lessening the penalty. They're lessening the legal consequences for it. Well, Portland, Oregon became a wasteland. And only now are they starting to they turned the corner. And I've seen a couple articles where they're sort of making a comeback because they realized legalized hard drugs are not a good idea.
Yeah, it's just not good for society. And look, I'm for less government always almost across the board over here. But at some point when you get into fentanyl, like this just isn't something that should just be self-distributing or legally allowed
self-medicating.
Self-prescribing. Yeah, this is both too inexpensive and too dangerous. And perhaps maybe some of the changes we've had at the border over these last 9 months will slowly start to stymie the supply and demand effect over here, right? Like Josh has talked about this 50 cent a pill fentanyl,
yeah.
Like, you know, $1, $2. Like, this is why you don't even see alcohol consumed on the streets anymore. And it isn't because we cleaned up society or that people stopped drinking or whatnot. It's because it's so expensive compared to something that is a fraction of the size, a fraction of the cost, and 20x the potency.
And your point is completely valid. All the legal, administrative hurdles, consequences that you are faced as an establishment who is licensed to sell and serve alcohol. Yeah, it's totally unfair, and I think the city should be made aware of the fact that look at the dichotomy of what you guys are doing. Another point that was called in, and if he wants to identify himself, he can call back. We can put him on. But I got a call that by downcycling this to a misdemeanor, the cost at the county jail is $300 to house an inmate for one day. And if you are housed, it's really a minimum of 2 days because the day you are brought into court, the next day you are charged for the full day. So taxpayers, every time a person is arrested and put into jail, it's going to be a $600 hit to the city budget, which they just gave up $97 million of revenue, and we're told that they have a budget problem because they're allocating all this money to free bus rides. So now they keep telling us that they are having a budget crisis at the city, and they're creating an additional burden on their budget.
Something's got to give over here, though. I mean, the streets of Tucson just continue to get more and more downtrodden. And for every Sergio opening up a new restaurant in Midtown, and, you know, we're going to be going for that new restaurant in the former Hi-Fi Kitchen and Cocktails location downtown to try to make part, to be a difference, right? Mm-hmm. To be part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem, and to fill, lighten and brighten up locations that have been dark now for many months or in some cases many years. But if we don't start addressing that at some point, it's just not going to be a desirable place for other residents to go for their leisure. There's already a lot of people that would say, dude, I don't know if I want to go to the Rialto Theater downtown. I don't know if I want to go to the Fox. They first and foremost hold up parking as this big detriment, but then you think of the unhoused population and you really have a serious, serious problem in Midtown that we've got to find a way to clean that up. Or you're just not going to see people opening up restaurants benevolently, people opening up retail shops benevolently to try to help out and make a difference. It's not going to make financial sense for them. And we're going to just lower and lower and lower the tax base and have more and more open and empty strip malls and shopping centers.
And I'm telling you, the citizens of Tucson have invested so much in downtown that it's hard to lose that, right? Because downtown has really been pumped up between the streetcar and the development and, you know, whatever people want to argue about that the streetcar begat development or whatever. But the rest of Tucson has suffered because of it. The rest of Tucson's roads, look at First Avenue. We got to do a go back on RTA just to get First Avenue done, which was one of the things that was promised in RTA 1. So many resources and so much energy has been rerouted to downtown at expense to other parts of the city. And the city council really needs to do something about this. I think Chad Kazmar's if you take the handcuffs off of them, his police force wants to do something about this. And it's a dilemma. There's not a lot of easy solutions. But man, oh man, they've let this thing spiral out of control for years now, and the chickens are coming home for roost. I'm really hoping that the voters at least say, look, how much worse can it get? Let's get a couple of new voices on the council and at least try to change the dialogue and try to move that Overton window, as they always refer to, a little bit to the right, and maybe listen to some new voices that might have some better solutions.
But, I mean, one only has to look at the election results from last night, Matt, to suggest that there is no push to the right in the southwest side of Tucson and CD7 in any capacity. In fact, given a special election, and I get mm-hmm. it, it's not apples to apples, but if you look at the numbers compared to the 24 election, it actually moved further to the left. Yeah. If you look at what happened sure. in Ward 5 election with Jesse Lugo and Selena Barajas, it also was a landslide.
Miranda Schubert in Ward 6. I mean, just basically, I mean, very, very progressive. I'll just use the polite term, but very, very far left.
Right. And so to suggest that the two Republican candidates in Ward 3 and Ward 6 have a big fighting chance over here in this race, like, color me dubious, my friend. I don't see it right now because yeah. I understand this little thing called math, right, and voter registration. And I just take a look at the numbers, and the outcome is pretty bleak.
Well, and let's be honest. You talk about the difficulty of an off-cycle election. Let's be honest. City of Tucson Council elections are by definition off-cycle. They're in an odd number year, right? There's been three elections already this year, however, two, a special election for the sales tax and congressional seat, and there have been multiple elections already this year. Plus, it's in an odd year. I mean, it would be very nice if the city could move their elections to an even year, but you and I both know that that will never happen.
Yeah, I mean, the fix is probably fixing the hybrid election system. It's probably nonpartisan elections and probably even years. And quite frankly, I think you'd get at least a fair outcome. And then if the will of the people is what it is, what more can you say? But at least we played with the rules of the game fairly stacked for both sides and let the voters decide. Why don't we take a quick break over here? We're going to talk about some things that your electeds decided. Our last little segment over here, we're going to talk about a few new laws coming up on the books on Friday, the 26th of September, just a couple days for you. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger and Matt Neely on 10:30 a.m. The Voice, your home for local news and talk. Hey, welcome back to your final segment of The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger, and we're joined by a quick caller over here on line one. We're lucky enough to have the former police chief of both the Tucson Police Department, South Tucson Police Department, and South Tucson City Manager, Mr. Sixto Molina. Good morning, Sixto.
Hey, good morning, Grant. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
So here's what I wanted to say. The issue is that police departments in the cities and towns cannot involuntarily commit drug addicts. And I believe there's a bill going through the legislature that will allow that to happen. Hopefully the bill is still working its way through the legislature. But the other problem I see by creating a misdemeanor offense is that when you book somebody into the Pima County Jail, the cities and towns have to pay a jail fee, and it's about $300+ per day, and that's going to get very, very expensive.
Quickly, indeed, sir.
Yeah. So, because we have a lot of fentanyl users around town, and if you book them all, I don't know that the jail will be able to handle them. Number one, and number two, it's going to get very expensive for cities and towns. So Sheriff Nanos, I believe, has been asking for a new jail, a jail that will meet today's needs. And I would certainly advocate for that so that a jail could be built where they have a special unit for drug addicts to detox under supervised conditions. Because misdemeanors, the police officers can cite them and release them on the spot, just like getting a traffic ticket. But these people will never show up in court, and it'll just create a huge volume of paperwork for the courts and the police.
Without a doubt, so this could add a tremendous expense to the city of Tucson, a line item that we already might not be able to afford.
Well, exactly. And I'm sure that line item is already very expensive today. So it's only going to get more expensive if this offense becomes a misdemeanor. Now, felons, on the other hand, is paid by the county and through our tax dollars, and it's already built into the budget. So that's something to consider. I throw that out for people that are interested in this topic, because the jail bill is something that has to be considered, and it's something that isn't talked about by anybody.
And then maybe we could just use laws that are, say, already on the books, such radical things as enforcing laws that currently exist, Sixto? What? Who would do that here in the city or the county?
Well, both, all law enforcement agencies would use existing laws, but they have to be prosecuted. If they're not prosecuted, it's a waste of time, because it takes an officer's time to book somebody into the jail, only to be released without any further prosecution.
And Chief Cat, sorry to interrupt. Finish your thought. I'm sorry.
Yeah, they have to figure out what is your objective. Is it to punish people? If you want to punish them, then create a law, keep them in jail for a certain amount of time, and then release them. If it's the objective is to turn these people around to make them healthier and get them off drugs, then they have to approach it from that standpoint of view.
These are tremendous challenges, Sixto, and I don't think there's an easy situation or solution to it. I certainly don't think we can just legislate ourselves out of it. We've got to start enforcing the laws that are both on the books and prosecuting once those have been enforced as well, too. And I don't see us doing either of those. We still allow panhandling on the streets, and open drug use just seems to be the norm and commonplace, and it really breaks my heart.
Yep, you're right, and I think we have to listen to our health experts at Pima County to help guide us, because I believe what people really want is to fix this addiction problem, which was caused by Big Pharma in the 2000s, because Big Pharma was giving doctors bonus money and vacation trips if they pushed OxyContin and other addictive drugs. And that comes from the DEA. Those are not my words. That's from the DEA.
Well, and they pushed a narrative that opiates were not addictive, which the, spoiler alert, that was wrong.
Clearly not the case.
Exactly. So recently there was a $28 billion lawsuit filed by the Department of Justice against Big Pharma. That's being, and some of that money, or all of that money, is being distributed nationwide to cities and towns. And they could use some of that money to help this drug addiction problem.
I love it. Well, Sixto, we appreciate you taking the time to call into the Morning Voice over here. It's Mr. Sixto Molina, former South Tucson Police Department chief and former South Tucson city manager as well, too. A man who knows a few things about
this. Thank you, Sixto. Your perspective is always welcome and appreciated.
And thank you, listeners, for spending part of your Wednesday with us here on The Morning Voice. What a great show. We had Sergio Pinon from Redbird Scratch Kitchen and Bar. Please go out there and visit him at 6th in Tucson.
Elote Nachos.
Elote Nachos for all, for sure. Looking forward to that one over there. Looking forward to the Cats game on Saturday up against Iowa State as well, too, when the 3-0 Cats take on the Cyclones. Super excited for Tucson. Super excited for season to come down upon you as well. I just want to say thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us, and we'll see you next week on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk.